You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni. We are back in the studio at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick. Way back in 2008, this was a sleepy little part of Brooklyn, and Roberta's Pizza was a pioneer. And now there's so much going on, and we're right on the eve of Beer Week, one of the, 10th Beer Week.
It's got to be getting up there, for sure.
And we got some great guests here to celebrate Beer Week. So let's go around the room and introduce, and then we'll talk more about Bushwick.
Hey, I'm Zach Kinney. I'm one of the co-founders of KCBC Brewery in Bushwick.
And I'm Louis Catazzone. I'm one of the owners of St. Agrestis in Greenpoint, Brooklyn.
All right. So, Zach, just for a quick second, you know, we've been coming out to the studio in Roberta's in Bushwick since 2010. And in a very short time, it went from just the pizza outposts and maybe Momo Sushi to having a couple great breweries out here.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely the Wild West of Brooklyn, you know, industrial, gritty. I'm pretty sure Roberta's used to be an auto shop. We signed our lease in 2015 and opened in 2016. And, you know, from 2010 to 2016, there was a ton of new food, new makers of things. And then even since we opened in 2016, it's gone through a whole nother revolution, you know, COVID included. I mean, it's been a wild ride.
Oh yeah. And then for Beer Week, I mean, I remember that started in like 2008 or nine, and that's evolved a lot.
It sure has. Yeah. I mean, you know, as the city has kind of grown in terms of the number of breweries, the number of local producers, it's really kind of revitalized and expanded the entire scene here in New York City. I think New York City went from being like the city where you could hardly find a local beer other than maybe Brooklyn Brewery or Six Point to arguably, you know, one of the best beer cities in the world, I think, in terms of local producers and variety of product. It's pretty awesome now.
That's great. And the scene has come so far. We've got, you know, when you were starting out 15 years ago, you were home brewing for beer. And then now there's more people. I hear all the time someone's doing a little sideline of a spirits business or an Amaro business.
Oh yeah, the liquor and that whole distilling side, micro distilling, has become a really cool, exciting, next level creative industry here in New York. Oh, yeah.
So let's do a little intro with our next other guest, Louis. So yeah.
Amaro.
Just tell us your quick backstory about you went from selling cigarettes, not to selling weed, but to a distillery.
I only deal in vices.
Yeah.
I started my career working in tobacco, but eventually, shortly after starting my career in tobacco, I ended my career in tobacco, moved into liquor, and I've been in spirits ever since. And St. Agrestis, that part of my story, the entrepreneurial leap of faith happened in 2017. Producing all Italian-inspired spirits, ready-to-drink cocktails, and now even non-alcoholic cocktails.
Well, that's great. So, Zach, you know, we're here at Roberta's with KCBC and Louis from St. Agrestis. Why? What's
well,
the backstory on
so,
this?
We've been great partners. Roberta's been big supporters of KCBC since when we opened, us being relatively local, them having such an awesome food and beer program. So we've done over the past, you know, 6-7 years, a couple of kind of one-off collaborations where we'll you know, we did a fruited sour, we did a rice lager 1 year, and we were talking with the team here back in the fall about let's do something cool, let's do something really weird and interesting, and kind of came up with this idea of taking our base black lager, our Schwarzbier, and doing something different to it, and The Roberta's guys, Jason, came up with this concept of like of an Amaro barrel aged black lager, and both he and I immediately were like, wait a minute, this is going to be really cool. We liked the concept, the flavors felt like they might work together, called up Louis here, and Louis was kind enough to essentially donate one of his barrels to the project. So today we actually are about to launch our collaboration. The beer is called A Dance with Death. It's an Amaro Barrel Aged Black Lager. We only had one, you know, spirits barrel of volume, about 50 gallons of liquid. So it's super limited, super small batch, super super interesting, and you know, I'm excited to share it with you.
It's all in bottle.
We have a couple of kegs. We have a keg that we're gonna have. I think we launched it on draft at KCBC and in package yesterday, and then we're gonna be doing an event here at Roberta's next week for New York City Beer Week on Wednesday, March 1st.
Bringing it all home.
Yeah, right, man, super duper.
Right. Should down be fun. The street. So Louis, you know, you with Amaro. I know Amaro. You know, I remember. It seems like forever ago that Souther Teague, who's our colleague on Heritage Radio Network, Speakeasy, he had this little shop of Amar e Amargo in the East Village, not too far from my old pub. And you'd walk in, and there wasn't anything overly sweet, and everything had Amaro in it. Mm-hmm. And it was eye-opening, but it was also quirky then. You know, now cheers to Souther, you know, you're like the guru. But what made you get interested in Amaro? And tell me where you were working. What distillery you're working with in
New York? Sure, yes. So Amaro, I mean, it's certainly having its golden age to some degree here in the U.S. It's been popular in Italy for forever. It was actually out of fashion in Italy until U.S. bartenders started to bring it back to the forefront. But my father's from Calabria in southern Italy, and I grew up with an Amaro culture in my household. Sunday dinners, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, 6 to 8 years old, a little tiny sip of Amaro after dinner on a Sunday, you know, totally responsibly done.
Finger and
exactly, put it in your mouth. Exactly. Yeah. You know, and it was very, very Italian, very European. And that was a part of my culture growing up. And then as I started to see it becoming very popular here in the US, I felt like, wow, there's a part of my culture that I'm kind of missing. And I'm in spirits. And I was working at a distributor and an importer. I also spent some time working at the Green Hook Distillery, a gin distillery that we actually partnered with on the space that we currently produce St. Agrestis. So everything is produced at the same distillery in Greenpoint that Green Hook Gin is produced at. But yeah, it just felt like this moment was happening. And if someone was going to be producing Amaro in New York or in the US, why not us? And myself, my brother, Matt, and my business partner, Stephen D'Angelo, have been making Italian spirits in Greenpoint since 2017 now.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then what is Amaro? I mean, you mentioned the processed. What is it akin to? Because I know what distilling is, and I know what winemaking is. I know what brewing beer is, but this is a little different.
Yeah. I mean, the simplest way to describe making Amaro is kind of like making alcoholic tea. So you're soaking herbs, spices, flowers, roots, seeds, and citrus in distillate, sometimes in an herbal distillate as well that is distilled with herbs and spices as well. And then you're extracting or macerating or steeping botanicals in varying levels of alcohol for different lengths of time, depending on the herbs. And then at that point, you kind of have a tincture, if you will. And that Amaro would then be diluted and sweetened, usually with cane sugar. We use organic cane sugar to sweeten our Amari. And then we also barrel age our Amaro, which good thing we do.
Yeah.
Because we wouldn't be able to do a collaboration and have any of the Amaro characteristics imparted on beer if it wasn't going into cask.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you guys, correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys are using ex bourbon barrels or ex whiskey barrels, and like rum, you're using them sort of repeatedly until they fall apart, basically, to essentially like blend the distillates, create that kind of magical extraction of oak and oxygenation and whatnot. Anyway, I'm a big fan of your Amaro, so you know.
Thank you, I appreciate it. I'm a fan of your beer.
It's cool.
Well, Zach, tell us about
let's retry this beer.
It's a daytime. Yeah. This is a Wednesday before. This is the pre beer week, and first let me have more of that Pilsner.
Oh, so you want a little more Pilsner?
Sure. I really do miss drinking KCBC, bro. It's,
you know.
What's the Pilsner?
So yeah, this is our year-round Pilsner. Last year we launched a year-round Pilsner. This beer is called Infinite Machine. Lagers for a long time, you know, kind of weren't the like in vogue for craft beer. you know, craft beer in a lot of ways kind of started out as like the antithesis to big, light, yellow, fizzy beer, to quote Greg Stone, Greg from Stone. You know, it's definitely come around, I think, in a lot of ways because the craft beer scene in the U.S. has matured a little bit, or matured a lot. Its trends have accelerated, and I think a lot of beer makers, you know, microbreweries and even drinkers are starting to appreciate the nuances of craft lager, fresh lager. And American brewers have access to quality grains and European hops, although with climate change, that's becoming even trickier on its whole nother sidebar. But, you know, it's a style of beer that we love. You know, we love, I mean, we love doing a lot of variety. KCBC, a lot of our kind of like brand ethos is about variety, but we saw an opportunity last year to create essentially a core, consistent year-round lager. And this is it. You know, we do a thing called Lager Appreciation Month every May that we started in COVID, which was just kind of a wacky idea to help us sell a bunch of lager. it worked. It's sticking. And again, you know, there's a lot of great lagers available now in New York and beyond.
So well, this is one of them. A great way to kick off Beer Week. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, man. Pretty traditional. You know, this is a little bit of a blend of both German. We've got some German-grown Saphir hops. We've got some Czech Saaz. And we've even got some Styrian Celia hops, which are Slovenian grown. So it's a little bit of a, you know, European hop medley, but pretty pretty clean, crisp, relatively bitter, but, you know, drinkable, flavorful. Yeah.
So with this special collaboration that this is a Roberta's project. So that's why we're at
Absolutely.
Roberta's.
You know, totally here on the
court. You and San Agrestis. So a big part of this are the Amaro barrels.
Absolutely.
So tell me about that process, because it's kind of weird, right? I mean,
yeah, I mean, you know, look, this is the first time
these are intense barrels. Oh, man. A lot of flavor.
I mean, Louis was like, I'll give you a fresh one. I was like, yeah, fresh is always better. And boy, it came in like hot, you know, in a good way. You know, the barrel, you know, really just was just like empty. Even it, you know, it still had obviously a little bit of residual liquid in it, and you know, we opened it and all of our brewers were like, whoa, what the fuck, man? You know, and it just had this unique flavor characteristic that, again, I'm sure Louis can talk more about, like the magical recipe, you know, the various ingredients that he uses. But you know, we were getting a lot of kind of like alpine or sort of northern Italian characteristics, you know, herbal, grassy, but also some kind of more, I don't know, like cinnamon or Christmas almost, allspice, you know, and thought like, all right, cool, let's get this beer in here. So, you know, our barrel aging process is something we've been doing since we opened at KCBC, and we're really proud of our team's ability to kind of really dial that in. We're purging the barrel of oxygen before we put any beer in, because we're really trying to limit the any risk of any outside contaminant or acetobacter or anything else kind of infringing upon the flavor extraction we're trying to create. You know, inherently with wood, you're dealing with oxidation. You're going to get, you know, it's not airtight. It's not like a stainless steel vessel. So you have some natural expansion and contraction, but we filled this in the colder months, kind of thinking that like, it might not need a lot of contact time. Our base recipe was a 4.5%, 4.6% Schwartz beer we called Morbid Hour. Put that in, and honestly, you know, a month and a half later, we were like, we better check on that. And we were like, wow, it's ready. And even ended up back blending it a little bit, because we felt like the Amaro character was amazing, but almost a little too powerful for drinkability. So luckily we had a little bit of the base beer, blended that back in, and packaged it up.
Here. Well, you just poured it for me. So tell me again what it is, because on the nose here, and I want Louis to talk this through.
Yeah.
My first thought is, whoa, this is herbal, and it's a black colored beer. This could be, it looks, if I was doing a steal this beer, you know, blind tasting, mm-hmm. I would think this was an Amaro.
You know, the Schwartz beer, I think, is a nice platform. You know, Schwartz beer is a traditional German style black lager, but it's not meant to be, you know, it looks like a dark, you know, you might call it like oatmeal stout or porter in terms of the visuals of a black lager, but the entire concept is that it's very light in terms of its body. It's not meant to be this chocolate bomb. It's meant to have a little layer of roast and maybe like bitter chocolate, but it's not it's not having that intensity of a stout or a porter, even though it might look like it. So again, in this case, the Amaro character really like shines, I think. We did, you know, fun little sidebar. When we pulled the black lager out, the timing worked so that we actually had an Imperial Stout that we were packaging close to the same timeline. So what we did is after we pulled the black lager out, we put the Imperial Stout back in. So we may end up with a second beer just because we felt like there was still a ton of character. Obviously, you know, the tincture and the Amaro that Louis's making is really intense. So we might even get two beers for one out of this. You know, we'll see in a few months.
Louis, what do you think of this beer and the process?
So, I mean, you nailed it. And this is my first time trying it, candidly. And it's got so much St. Agrestis Amaro characteristic in it. It almost feels like we took your lager and we dumped a little bit of St. Agrestis Amaro into it in a really, really fun way. I think the visual totally looks exactly like the Amaro as well. So there's so much. I'm happy that you chose a beer that's less intense too, because if this was paired with a porter or an oatmeal stout, like you said, it would be way too intense.
Yeah.
There is something very elegant and pretty about this, but it is also definitely not for the faint of heart.
If you don't like Amaro, you're probably not gonna dig this. I mean, we've had so many brewers. I mean, we packaged it, I think, about 3 weeks ago and had the New York City Brewers Guild January meeting was at KCBC and pulled out a few bottles for just like, you know, the super industry, you know, brewers, people making beer in New York City. And we're like, listen, you want to try something different? And the response was amazing because people were, I mean, you know, I think Amaro, you know, like you said, is having a big moment here in the US, you know, especially over the last like 3 years, 2 years, even now, I don't know if you know if it's peaked yet. I'm sure at some point we'll be like, you know, it's passe. But right now, within the service industry and within the brewing industry, people love this beverage. They love these flavors. The concept of cleansing your palate with this intense herbal concoction really resonates, and people went nuts for this beer. They really liked it.
Zach, why did you go with the black lager? I didn't read the notes.
Yeah.
I thought when I started your bottle, I thought this was going to be like a 12% bomb, a burning alcohol bomb.
Well, you know, I mean, we love lager, but hence the year-round pilsner, and you know, we felt like, you know, it was also uncharted territory for us. We were like, okay, we don't know. I know what his Amaro tastes like. We know it's really delicious. We know it's really intense. We don't know what this is gonna sort of what the result's gonna be. We don't know how long the contact time is gonna be. We also knew we wanted to get it out in the winter months. Just thinking about the flavor combinations and kind of the opportunity to bring it in here to Roberta's and get it on their menu, you know, in a seasonal kind of appropriate way. So we thought that our best bet was to take a more, you know, a lighter flavored but still dark roasty base beer. And that was ultimately the choice, you know. We've also done we've taken our black lager, the same beer, Morbid Hour. We have we've aged our Schwartz beer in X bourbon barrels after we've done a barrel aged stout. So we have done what I would call sort of an oak aged version of our Schwartz beer. Where we're picking up maybe a little bit of the bourbon-y, oaky kind of tannins. And that beer's been pretty successful for us. We've done it 3 or 4 times now. So we thought like, okay, let's up the flavor, you know, impact with this kind of Amaro character, and thought we'd need a short contact time, thought we could turn around in time. You know, it was a little bit of a gamble, but, you know, hey, I think it came out pretty cool.
Wow, so your experiments with barrels really paid off.
Yeah, I think in this case, you know, again, it was one barrel where like, hey, you know, if it fails, I don't know, we'll probably all drink it anyway. But we're stoked about it.
And then for Louis, so for you, the condition of the barrel that you gave them, I mean, I think of like aging something in a wine barrel, there's lees. What was left in that barrel? Because it's not a dry barrel. No. It's not a charred barrel.
So it was a former bourbon cask when we got it. Do you remember what distillery it had?
I think it was Heaven Hill.
Yeah, that makes sense. We have a lot of Heaven Hill barrels, so that makes sense. So we pulled the Amaro the week we gave you guys the barrel. So it sat empty for days, if that. You know, it might have been 48 hours.
Without it was very fresh.
It was super fresh.
Yeah.
And we emptied, but we didn't do anything else to that barrel. We didn't, you know, wash it out with hot water or do anything like that before we gave it to you guys.
Yeah, neither did we. You know, we were just bump, right, went right in. You know?
Yeah, and you wanted the residue.
We wanted that. You know, we were, you know, I mean, you know, I'm interested to hear from you, Louis, in terms of, you know, things like color or char, right? You know, and whether any of that comes from your barrel aging process. You know, for us, when we're dealing with straight up X spirits barrels, you know, there will be, you know, for the most part, American whiskey, bourbon, you know, it's 3 years, maybe four, maybe 5 years that these, you know, but American whiskey makers for the most part are using first use, you know, oak, meaning they've taken, you know, oak, it's been charred on the inside by the coopers, and they immediately put their spirits in and get all those beautiful colors. It goes in clear, comes out looking, you know, beautiful and golden and toffee and MR, you know. For us as the brewers, you know, we'll have that residual spirit, you know, color and character and a little bit of char. But, you know, and this was not necessarily an exception, but I'm interested to hear from you, Louis, in terms of like whether you find, you know, with fresh barrels you're getting from distillery, do those behave or extract differently versus barrels you've used again and again?
Great question.
Great question.
So we don't, when we bring a barrel in, we bleach the barrel. And for those who don't know the process of bleaching a barrel, it doesn't involve bleach. It's just a boiling hot water, and sometimes you'll scrape the inner layer of char out of that barrel. The reason for that is we don't want there to be much nuance between a Heaven Hill barrel and a Jim Beam barrel. And in addition to that, we barrel age because we want a couple of things to happen, but one of those things is not impart bourbon characteristics onto our Amaro. We want to pick up some of that toasted vanilla from the oak. We want to have some oxygen contact, but we don't necessarily want to impart bourbon nuance onto our Amaro. And the Amaro doesn't taste like bourbon. So yeah, the cask came in, it was scraped out the inner layer of char with boiling hot water, and then Amaro.
You actually scrape. Do you have like a long crowbar or something in there? You kind of.
Yeah, you know, there's
elbow grease. I mean, it's small scale. You probably
deconstructed
get
and reconstructed some barrels too.
Wow, that's hardcore, man.
Yeah, I got a brother who's a woodworker.
All
and,
right, that's useful.
A cooper in his
it's a handheld cheese grater. They scrape the inside, put some Parmesan rinds in there.
That's the secret.
Magic, right? Yeah,
exactly.
Parmesan rind.
We actually borrow Roberta's cheese grater. But yeah, and then Amaro sat in that cask for years. Yeah. I mean, we barrel.
How long do you guys? Yeah.
We barrel aged for 6 months.
Okay.
Which isn't insignificant for the influence that it has on the Amaro, but it's basically been a continuous Amaro barrel for that barrel has to be at least 3 or 4 years worth of Amaro batches going in and then coming out 6 months later, and then within days refilled again. Because while we have taken some barrels apart, we don't like doing it. and the more time a barrel sits dry, as you know, it warps and then doesn't hold liquid. So we try to have a pretty quick turnaround between emptying a barrel and refilling a barrel. So that's been a continuous Amaro cask.
Zach, for your process of making this beer, how long was the Schwartz beer in the barrel?
Barrel was filled, I want to say middle of December, maybe a little earlier than that. And we pulled it. I want to say it was about between five and six weeks. So it was also like remarkably short, that's the shortest contact time we've ever experienced on our side. But it worked. It was that potent. I mean, again, it was pretty exciting and a little frightening how kind of fast it happened. Luckily we were expecting a pretty quick extraction. I mean, we have barrels that we filled. We were just checking on them the other day. You know, there's some Widow Jane, another distillery, making some pretty good whiskey, down in Red Hook. And we have some of their, whiskey, you know, bourbon style, whiskey barrels. And I think we filled those with Imperial Stout, maybe, I don't know, 18, 20 months ago. And just the other day I was looking with my brewer, I was like, we should probably check on those. And we did. And they were coming along nicely. Not over extracted, not over oxidated. But you know, those barrels were in really good condition. And you know, having a 14% base beer and a spirit barrel where we already kind of have a more, you know, understanding of where we're going with the flavor compound, you know, flavor combination allows us to maybe ignore something for a longer period of time. Whereas this was like, we better get on it. And, you know, if anything, we caught it maybe even a little late, given that we ultimately decided to backblend a little bit of the base beer. Not that much. It was probably
so there's 3%. No formula. It's almost like every barrel is different, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, especially at our scale, you know, we don't have temperature control in our warehouse, you know, beer, you know, our Imperial Stouts or our wild, our funky barrels that might go through, you know, the summer months and the winter months. And in the summer, it is hot in our non-air conditioned warehouse. And in the winter, it's barely heated. So, you know, the angel share, the evaporation is totally different. And especially on the wild side, when you're talking about microbacteria and Britannomyces, the flavor differential, depending upon which zone of the warehouse it's even in, can impact the flavor development.
This is a great show, and yeah, we're going to take a short break, be back in a few minutes, and keep talking more about the special KCBC, Roberta's, St. Agrestis Beer Week episode on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Hey, it's New York City Beer Week here on Heritage Radio Network. Support us and become a member at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. All right, so my good buddy Zach Kinney, who started out as a home brewer, early days of Josh Bernstein's
New York City
homebrew jamboree and Jimmy's Number 43, yep, is Mr. Big in town now with KCBC. And we have a great collaboration here between you, Roberta's Pizza, and St. Agrestis and Morrow. So, Zach, one more time,
yep,
what is this beer that you made? And then you're going to tell me the notes.
Sure.
I the first time I tasted this, which was 10 minutes ago,
yeah,
I thought of a Belgian West Coast collaboration beer I'd had many years ago. St. Foulien and, you know, gosh, I don't even know their name anymore. A West Coast place.
Sure.
And they had the Belgian brewers had pulled wild fennel from a highway in California. That's what I smell with this beer.
The beer in question is called A Dance with Death. It's an Amaro barrel-aged black lager, as we mentioned before. The Amaro barrel came from our friends at St. Agrestis, and the black lager is our core Schwartz beer, 4.6% Schwartz beer called Morbid Hour. So put them together. Here we have A Dance with Death. You know, I'm so bad at this. I mean, I should be really, really, really dialed in with my flavor notes. But this is such an alien flavor combo versus the normal what I would call beer tasting notes. And, you know, I'm writing a beer description for most of our beers, and I've gotten pretty dialed in with the difference between this kind of citrus notes versus a tropical note on a hoppy beer, or, you know, floral versus grassy versus citrus.
It's not one note.
It's not any of those. This is, you know, this is remarkably compact. I mean, I get kind of this,
to me, it was like the first
almost cola, or, you know, like, I think fennel, I think is
fresh fennel
is in there. I get some
cola is a good one. It does taste a little bit like cola.
I get some.
Maybe now we know the secrets of Coca-Cola.
Yeah, maybe. You know, I can't put my finger. I haven't spent a ton of time in, you know, the Alps or in northern Italy, but like I close my eyes and I picture myself on a big grassy meadow, and I'm smelling some sort of thing that I picked, and I don't know what it is, but that's what I'm getting. You know?
And then on the back end, it's quite different from any other beer I've had.
Yeah, it's a little more bitter. I mean, you've got some, you know, there's kind of a hint of sweetness that I kind of get for a hot minute there, which maybe is just the more of the kind of like kind of middle of the lager. But you know, this is the Amaro barrel before it's been sort of back sweetened. So is that correct?
Yeah, there's no sugar in the barrel. And so, I'm having fun. Yeah. I'm obviously, I know it goes into the Amaro. And I'm going to reveal it.
But let Zach
finish. Of course. Yeah. I'm having fun.
You know, but there is something kind of, you know, whether it's vanilla or something that again, whether it's the wood or the lager or all of it kind of coming together, and maybe even a cinnamon or spice. I can't even know if I put my finger, anise almost, you know, as well. I'm really excited about this.
And I want to say same thing. The nose to me, if it's one note, it's like a complex fresh fennel. Mm-hmm. But on the back end, that had a few sips. I didn't think cola, but you're right. It's like this kind of, maybe this is the origin of Coca-Cola.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the back end, this bitterness is really neat.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, wow, this is really food friendly.
Yeah. Yeah, the bitterness and the dryness.
Bitterness with really, dry without sweetness.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I'm ready for pizza. Yeah,
totally.
Roberta's.
That was a lot of fun for me. It really was.
Well, why? You don't have other people taste. I mean, he's not a Namara guy. He's not a spirits guy.
No, and yeah, of course, people constantly, there's 20 botanicals that go into St. Agrestis Amaro. Yeah. And we reveal a lot of them, but we don't reveal everything. It's always a lot of fun for me to kind of hear and watch somebody explore the roller coaster ride that the Amaro in and of itself in its own form has. But then to see you picking those botanicals apart as they're influencing this beer collaboration, even more fun for me. So you nailed a lot of it. Mm. I mean, there's certainly there's no cola nut in here, but
that's the secret of cola?
Well, cola nut gives a cola characteristic for sure. And a lot of Amari contain cola nut. As I say this, I always call it the snapping botanical in St. Agrestis Amaro, and it's because it's one that's always on the tip of folks' tongue as they're tasting the Amaro, especially for the first time. It's nostalgic for almost every American, but we don't know by name immediately or what the association is, and it's sarsaparilla root.
Ah, there you go.
So
yep. That's I'm calling it cola or beer, you know,
the root beer note.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
And there's something I think.
So that's not just American, that's Italian too.
No, not necessarily. Okay. Sarsaparilla root is kind of, that's one of the botanicals in St. Agrestis Amaro that makes the flavor profile quintessentially American. There's a lot of botanicals that go into St. Agrestis Amaro that wouldn't necessarily exist in an Italian Amaro. And we weren't trying to create an Italian Amaro with St. Agrestis Amaro. That wasn't the intention. But specifically, sarsaparilla root, I think, is one of the botanicals that shines in our Amaro and certainly comes through in the beer. And it's nostalgic to the point where our memories as children with, as far as root beer is concerned, they're good memories.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have like a, oh, yeah, that day I had that root beer with grandma or grandpa. What a bad day that was. You know, it's usually a positive experience.
It's stopping at the drive-in. It's, you know, yeah.
And it's not bat you over the head present in the Amaro or in the beer, but the nuance of it, I think, is enough to send your brain to this place and transport
roll out the barrel of root beer.
Yeah, there we go.
Exactly. And we're talking about the bitter finish there. And I think for like it's a different type of bitter that comes from this root called gentian root, gentianelle. And that's going to be an Italian. We get ours from Italy. It doesn't just come from Italy, but it's a root of a flower, a Highland flower. And it is a different type of bitterness than an IPA bitterness. It hits you more on the sides of the tongue as opposed to on the top of the tongue. And I think that that's something super unique about this. It's not extremely bitter. I have no sense of the IBU scales. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything. But it wouldn't sit very high on that scale.
But it's distinct, and it's so I don't know. It jumps out at me as like as different than hop bitterness in terms of its expression. Even though this beer has some roast bitterness from the dark malt, it has some hop bitterness from the noble hops, and then obviously it has this other layer, which I think definitely pops on a finish there.
Absolutely. And then the final, and what we started with was fennel, right? Mm-hmm. So there's no fennel that goes into St. Agrestis Amaro, but we actually grind anise seed. Mm-hmm. So very, very similar in flavor profile, anise seed. And it is certainly present in St. Agrestis Amaro, but in a very, there's a moment when this beer touches your palate where it flirts with that anise characteristic. It doesn't, again, knock you over the head, and then it kind of moves on to some of the other profile. That's kind of where that sweet mid palate comes mm-hmm. in. I think it's a lot of fun. I mean, so much of the Amaro is in there. Of the 20 botanicals, a lot of the Northern Alpine type of spices gives you a warming kind of characteristic. It's late February in New York. We haven't had a snow day yet. But man, if we have a snow day, this is the Amaro to drink.
Yeah.
March tends to be our coldest month in New York the last few years. Yeah. So if we have a good, you know, foot and a half of snow, catch me in Carroll Gardens in the backyard with a little fire going and a bottle of this. I'll be a happy camper.
Yeah.
Louis, where can I get your stuff? I mean, I know you're on the menu here at Roberta's. Is there a tasting room in Brooklyn?
So there's no tasting room in Brooklyn. We had a tasting room prior to the pandemic. It wasn't really our bread and butter. Zach saw it recently.
It's full of product, man. You guys are bursting at the seams there. You gotta, you know, use your real estate.
Yeah. So when we closed it on March 9th, 2020, we had every intention of opening it, but by the time we were ready to open it, as far as the world and the status of the world was concerned, we didn't have space for it anymore. So there is no tasting room. However, St. Agrestis Amaro is distributed throughout 35 states with wholesalers in those states. Our non-alcoholic stuff is available online directly from us in the 48 contiguous U.S. United States, as well as Canada. And we export to a few markets. We export to Canada. We export to Japan. We export to some European countries. So you can find St. Agrestis out in the world at your local shop if you're in the U.S. in many cities. And also, we live in 2023, and there's ways to get things on the internet these days. Right.
Well, yeah, thank God for the
as
internet.
As our Italian friends say, mazel tov.
Something like that, right?
What I love about doing the show is that this was a little project, and I didn't even know what you guys were doing, and it's really turned me on. And I think this is what I love about the beer world in New York City. There's always something changing, evolving, and it's great to see you guys at the forefront. To dive deep, okay, Amaros and sweet vermouth. Okay, little history. There's secret recipes,
yes,
and secret herbs. I don't want to say just like Coca-Cola, but, you know, at some point they probably all diverged, right? Like 19th century people made herbal potions, and you're talking about steeping, like tea making.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the origins of Amari and vermouth were pharmacists in Northern Italy and the border of Italy, France, Switzerland, up there in Northern Italy. That's where a lot of these origins for some of the original recipes, they were actually created, these ancient legacy Amari companies. Many of them were created as pharmaceuticals in the beginning for stomach ailments. And Amari traditionally was consumed in Italy after a meal because it helps you with digestion. In a strange way in the US, it's hard to combine drinking and health. We're not good at understanding
how those two things can work.
I can say it's good for you, but you guys can't put it on your label.
We actually we couldn't even put the word digestivo on our label or digestif because we didn't have any scientific evidence that our product specifically helped with digestion.
Wow.
You know, that's
America.
That's how labels are approved.
Yeah.
It depends on the person. That person said nope. So in the back of our label, it says this is Brooklyn's tribute to Amari. We wanted it to say this is Brooklyn's tribute to Digestivi or Digestifs. And we had to stick with Amari. It's all fine. Pretty much the same meaning. But, you know, little nuance here, little nuance there.
Yeah, it's education. And this is cool. Zach, do you carry anything like Amaro at your tasting room?
We don't. We've talked about trying to up our liquor game, and we want to bring this in. And I honestly, they're, you know, Louis phony Negroni, which is first of all brilliant marketing name. Having worked in advertising, it's amazing. I'm so glad you guys thought of it before somebody else did. But it's also really, really good.
Phony Negroni. What is
phony
it?
Negroni? Yeah, you know, they're non-alcoholic Negroni.
A non-alcoholic Negroni.
Yeah, it's on the menu here. You guys saw it earlier.
Is it already pre-mixed?
Yeah, it's ready to go. So it's
put it on ice or not?
I would say serve it just like you'd serve a Negroni. Put it over a big cube, give it an orange twist, and it's ready to go. It's been a fun one for us. If you're interested in abstaining one day a week.
The mocktail market.
You know, I don't know if we're conquering it, but we're having a lot of fun in it. It opens up a lot of doors because of the.
I love a foamy Negroni with a splash of gin.
It's happened before. I would be lying if I said I didn't do it. we've seen all sorts of variations on it too. It's a great Negroni alternative on its own, but shake it up. Someone was doing that yesterday, which, you know, I wouldn't have thought to shake it. You don't shake a Negroni, you stir one. But someone shook it up yesterday and kind of aerated it with a little orange juice. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Super good. I mean, there's the phony Negroni is fun, but yeah. I think as folks are looking for more and more non-alcoholic options in addition to their alcohol options, there's plenty of good non-alcoholic beer. We were talking about some earlier.
Yeah.
It's fun to have an option for Negroni lovers in the non-alcoholic space too.
And I love Negronis. I mean, I lived in Italy for about, I did a study abroad program in college, and I moved back there, worked as a translator, Italian-English translator. And Negroni was my go-to. Love that beverage. I'm a big fan of Amaro's, you know, and you know, we're hoping to up our game in our tasting room, especially this summer. We're looking for, I think we're going to be doing the Open Streets program is hopefully going to be approved for our block on Troutman Street in Bushwick. So we'll have like the whole thoroughfare closed to car traffic. Looking for some additional foot traffic and some cool menu options. And I think this is going to be on our list for sure.
It's great. So this Amaro is a similar flavor to the beer we just had.
Yeah. Do you want to try it?
Let's have a quick taste. And I just want to ask you a little more about distilling. So coming into the show today, I mentioned that, you know, I know Cellar Teague and Amaury Amargo, and, you know, I've had some good Amaros, and usually I go to a lot of places I don't. But I like good Amaros. Really dry, dryness is important. But I didn't quite know how you made them. And I was thinking about, like, you know, an old Italian recipe I had from 25 years ago in my old restaurant. I'd put, like, you know, buy a vodka, throw some fresh grapes from a farm in, and sugar, and let it sit. And then I don't know what happened, but then we'd strain it out and keep it in the fridge and serve it again, always in small doses as like a little digestive, which you can say in restaurants.
Yeah, you can. You can say that loud.
So what's the process? Because you said you work at a distillery. Mm-hmm. So this is like you're licensed and you're working, you're part of a distillery. So you've got this license. You're not just making 22%, you know, wine product.
No, yeah. So St. Agrestis is produced at a distillery.
So you can't just make this in a store and say you're a winery and
Starting with super high proof.
Yeah. You couldn't sell it. So we start with neutral spirit. Neutral spirit is grain, in our case, distilled to 190 proof. I'm seeing some nods of approval. Thank you. If they're enjoying the Amaro.
This is really good. Citrus pops out.
So don't worry, Zach's going to give you analysis.
I'll tell you your other ingredients.
I love it. I love it. There is citrus. We miss that in the beer. It doesn't shine in the beer, it's certainly prevalent in the Amaro.
Yeah.
But starting with a neutral spirit gives you kind of a blank canvas to be able to really let the botanical flavors shine. And
at Green Oak. Is it Green Oak Ginsmith?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You guys are distilling a neutral spirit.
No. Oh, so
you bring it in.
We bring the neutral spirit in. Yeah. And that's how almost every Amaro in the world is made. You know, in New York, no one really has the capabilities in New York City to actually create neutral spirit. It requires really tall stills. We don't do any fermentation at St. Agrestis. No fermentation happens at the distillery in Greenpoint. And so what we do is we bring in neutral spirit, and a lot of folks will say, oh, you know, Louis, the head distiller from St. Agrestis, or Louis, the distiller from St. Agrestis. I call myself producer and
blender.
A lot of what I do is blending.
And you're not master distiller.
Taster.
Yeah, I mean, look, you could say it.
I don't know too many master distillers. Yeah. Just so you know.
It's like brewmasters. Yeah, that's not a real thing.
Yeah, master blenders, maybe. But
exactly. So we, you know,
And pit masters, not that many kids. Because yeah. you smoke, you're not a pit master.
But yeah, the process is taking neutral spirit and turning it into something really, really elegant and elevated. The word agrestis, so we talked about the name a little bit. It's Latin for of the wild or of the earth, but there's a secondary meaning for it. And I think
is that the nun you met in second grade?
No, sounds like
that's the third meeting.
Catholic, yeah. Ruler punishment by ruler.
So if I knocked over my
that was bad. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. If I knocked over my amaro right now,
we're joking because Saint Agrestis is not a real saint.
Saint Agrestis is not a real saint.
This is a hoodwink.
Saint Agrestis is a Mother Nature like face for our brand. And Agrestis is Latin for of the wild or of the earth. In one hand, she holds an elixir. Yeah, she holds an elixir. In the other, an herb in almost scale-like balance, because that's our goal in everything that we produce, bitter, sweet, herbal balance. But the second meaning for Agrestis beyond of the wild is you could call somebody wild, like, or uncouth, if you will. So if I knocked over my glass, made a big mess here, you could say, Louis, you're Agrestis. And I kind of love that as a second meaning for it, because, awesome. I mean, first of all, I am, you know, and I would. But beyond,
I thought that was called bull in a china shop.
Yeah, well,
same thing.
I get called that often.
Well, you could be called Agrestis now.
There you go.
The reason I love it so much is because the herbs come in totally unrefined from all over the world. 5 continents worth of botanicals end up in our bottle. And we turn them from this wild plant into this elevated, but also not overly stuffy or complicated drink. And they come in wild and they enter our Brooklyn distillery of all places and they leave amaro. It's kind of
you come in wild, you drink this and you become civilized.
Yeah.
Before Zach breaks this down, last thing for me is why sugar in the process? It's already, you've got a neutral spirit. Mm-hmm. You've got all these herbs and things. Mm-hmm. I liked the dry version. And it's not sweet at all, but what role does sugar play in the amaro?
If there was no sugar in here, it would be undrinkably bitter. It is extremely bitter without a balancing agent. In this case, we use sugar. In some Italian amari, they might use honey. In most, they use sugar. There's also, of course, some big manufacturers who will use sugar beet as a sweetener. We use organic cane from South America to sweeten our amaro, and it has to be palatable. So
does it go in as a syrup, or it goes in as a raw sugar?
We make the syrup. So yeah. We bring the sugar in raw, and we turn it. Part of the dilution after the barrel aging includes the water associated with turning solid sugar into liquid sugar, and then that's part of our blending calculus.
Brooklyn water, man. Yeah.
A lot of Brooklyn water.
What proof is it at some point? Like, okay, after the neutral spirit, what's the proof?
Extractions happen at varying different levels of alcohol. Everything gets blended and barrel aged at 80 proof. So when it hits that barrel that ended up being a 5-week home for this beer as well, that the contents of that barrel were all 80 proof or 40% alcohol.
Wow.
And then it hits the bottle at 60 proof or 30% alcohol. So it's a quarter diluted before it hits the bottle.
Right. So Zach, let's break this down.
I mean, it was so funny because immediately I was like, oh, you know, the citrus, the whether it's orange or, you know, whatever that citrus component jumped out at me at first. Again, mostly because over the last like 3 or 4 days, I've been sipping on the black lager, which, as you mentioned, Louis, like the citrus, for whatever reason, seems to have been mostly buried or it's way in the background versus some of those other characteristics. Whereas in the amaro, and one of the things I love about Negroni is that kind of citrusy, the Campari plus the orange kind of component. And I love how that jumps out at me in this. And there's also, man, it's like, I mean,
this is so much.
It's got some heat I associate that with like cinnamon. Like when we've done cinnamon beers or we've done, you know, we use barrel aged stouts, you know, cinnamon is a, It's kind of a tricky ingredient, whether using whole sticks or ground powder on the beer side, in a lot of ways, because it is, you know, you think of it in baking or in general in the sort of pastry or dessert world as part of the whole sweet family. But, you know, it's hot, man. It has heat to it, cassia, or, you know, and that seems to jump out, whether it's actual cinnamon or it's just some other spice blend. But that again, I think is distinctly more prominent.
And cinnamon with other things can make a really very complicated flavor.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it can be an ingredient on the beer side where you can easily overdo it. You know, and it's something you got to really watch. Particularly even if you're trying to do, let's call it a dessert stout with cinnamon, you know, that cinnamon can overtake the entire beer really quickly if you're not careful.
The dryness level of this, mm-hmm. you as a brewer,
I think it's perfectly balanced. I mean, I can't say that I would like it more if it was drier or sweeter. I definitely, you know, I'm pretty similarly in the family of preferring anything in the Amaro family or Fernet family or whatever that is not overly sweet. Maybe it's my age, maybe it's my food palate. But this, I think, hits a real like perfect spot there. You know, I don't think it would be, especially if you're trying to make a cocktail too, you know, I think this is probably spot on in terms of the level of sweetness. I like drier, less sweet Amaros, and you know, this to me, like I was comparing it to, let's see, I think we had Amaro Nonino, and I think I had a Montenegro at home, and this to me had more spice, had less sweetness in the overall balance, which, you know, it was my wife and I were both like, this is the winner, you know.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. And any last questions, either of you?
Let's, you know, I'm
you have 10, but ask one.
What do you have any other new projects you're working on, Louis? Any other like within this field or whatever? Any new stuff that you'd like to do more of or you want to do in the future?
You know, we're fortunate enough that we've figured out this fun quarterly release that we do. We're kind of taking a page out of Limited Beer Releases book, and we're doing something called the Sinners and Saints Society.
Awesome.
And the Sinners and
Sounds like a KCBC thing.
I love it.
Yeah.
There's some overlap there, yeah, for totally sure. Yeah, totally. So the Sinners and Saints Society allows us to kind of, you know, extend our creative wings and do some weird stuff. It's filled with some of the most adventurous Amaro, you know, I don't want to call them nerds, but they are.
And
I say it lovingly.
Nerds are cool, man.
They are cool. I say it lovingly. So they're looking for something that you can't really find, or something that's weird, or maybe something that used to be produced in, you know, the late 1800s and isn't anymore. And we get to have a lot of fun.
Cool.
And release things that are a little bit more clever and allow us to do some stuff like that. So one interesting part of that is we might have some really weird barrels available at some point.
Because
we're barrel aging some of them. When we barrel age them and we release them, we're not planning on ever re-releasing these things. They're really one and done. And so there could be some fun,
cool,
you know, casks that end up being available. And of course,
what's different? I'm sure you know. You're varying the herbal mix or the bittering?
Yeah, I mean, for example, we over the holidays, we launched this wine-based kind of Digestivo. We called it the Three Gifts. Saint Agrestis has no religious affiliation. The name has no religious history, but the Three Gifts, of course, being the three gifts that were given to Jesus by the three wise men.
The Magi, yeah.
Yeah, the Magi, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it was gold leaf or gold, myrrh, and frankincense. And we actually created
what
product with those three.
I've heard that before.
That's amazing. Yeah. That sounds super cool, super nerdy.
Again, no historic for sure, but not necessarily leaning in on the religious undertones of the name, but not necessarily religion in general. I'd like to be clear about that, you know. But we had a lot of fun with it, and the response has been super cool.
Cool.
I mean, we gave it to some friends. I got a bottle with your name on it.
Nice. I'm gonna try that. Yeah,
we have a few bottles left of it. Cool. But like things like that are examples of some weird, you know, that doesn't have there's no reason for that product to hit liquor store shelves in America.
You know what I mean? This is super cool, though.
Zach, this is an awesome show. I'm going to go overtime. One last one. Yeah. So, like, when we're tasting and judging, you know, in home brewing in particular, it seemed like for years it was always about finding flaws because that's how people learn. When your nerds are tasting your products, because it's from a distilled product and everything, what often gets brought up to you? Is there a criticism? Are there suggestions?
You know, our biggest criticism that we receive at St. Agrestis would be that we're not necessarily Italian, you know? We're making Italian-inspired spirits in Brooklyn, which has a rich Italian history or Italian-American history. But as far as the criticism, usually there's a... Usually folks want to hate it until they try it. And then they try to hate it. And sometimes they do, obviously. This stuff is all subjective, you know? Sure. But yeah, and I think that's for the person who's in the know. For the person who's not in the know, it's always, oh, this is herby is always the word.
Herby.
Herby. When herby is used, you're like, this isn't your type of drink yet. Sure. Maybe it will be. Yeah. Maybe this is your first foray into it. But when herby is used, it's a telltale sign that somebody's like, ooh, this is herbal and bitter and not necessarily what I wanted to put in my mouth.
They're going
to
grow into it.
They will. They should.
Exactly.
They,
yeah. It's like coffee. It's like coffee's bitter.
Yeah.
You know, you start drinking lots of sugar and, you know, different types of milk products and flavor syrups. Eventually, you just drink straight black coffee.
There you go.
Brussels sprouts, dark chocolate, IPAs. We're changing. America's changing.
We're getting there. Yeah.
All right. Down you guys rocked it out. So, Zach, I cannot think of a better way to kick off Beer Week in 2023 after all we've been through. And it's great to see you standing. Yeah, and you still got that classic KCBC sweatshirt on, man.
Oh, yeah, man.
You guys
Opening bash is this Saturday. Opening bash. Get your tickets. Opening bash.
Shows up by then. But even then, you're also going to be able to come to Roberta's and
drink
this beer on tap. Thank you so much, man. Zach Kinney, KCBC. Say your name.
Louis Catasone, St. Agrestis.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Jimmy Carboni and Casey Baroni.
Casey Baroni. All right.
Thanks so much for joining us, Heritage Radio Network. Big shout out to our engineer, Armin Spengen. Thank you so much. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo! Thank you.
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.